A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 232. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about the Clifton House mystery. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, the Clifton House mystery is a spooky children's TV program from ITV's HTV regional production station. 1978 is when this comes from, and we've been watching 6 25-minute episodes or thereabouts. A fairly straightforward haunted house mystery for kids to sort of figure out what's going on and decipher the puzzle behind the haunting. So some spooky children's television for us to get into again, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And it's a sort of intriguing and historical kind of story, you know, with elements from the past coming into it and lots of nice spooky elements in there without being too scary or horrific or intimidating for kids. So it has a nice balance there, I think.
Okay. A well-balanced spookiness for us.
I think so. The setup for this is with the Clare family, who have just moved into a rather rundown old house in the Clifton area of Bristol. They have also bought some items that belong to the previous owner that were auctioned off at the beginning of the story. The previous owner is Mrs. Betterton, and her granddaughter lives with her, and they had been living at the house.
Yes, and so the Clare family take over, and obviously they're a sort of young family, middle-class family. They've got plans to renovate this old house, but all those plans get put on hold because, a series of increasingly strange events start to take place, and they realise that there's something unsettling and supernatural going on. And in particular, we will talk about some of these items that they've acquired from the previous owner. So a spooky music box, an old military helmet, and an old picture all play some significant parts in this mystery, the titular Clifton House mystery itself.
Yes, absolutely. And it definitely deals with these old articles and the old house itself that are imbued with something that makes them important in the present. Looking at the characters, Timothy Clare, played by Sebastian Brakes, is a concert pianist and the conductor of a local orchestra, and he is hoping to find success in Bristol and in Bath, and is talking about this American tour that he is hoping to get, that they keep referring to as being something that will be quite lucrative and helpful for the family. He is very pragmatic and is quite skeptical about the various strange events that they see during the course of the story.
Yes, but perhaps more sensitive to what's going on, of course, is his wife, Sheila Clare, played by the actress Ingrid Hafner. Interesting actress because we could almost consider her the first Avengers girl, or the first Avengers woman, I should say, because she appeared in the very first series of the Avengers, but then she was the assistant Carol to the Ian Hendry character. I think you know more about this than me, Brian, but it wasn't really the Avengers that it would become known and loved for at that time in the first series.
Yes, that's right. She played Carol in the 1961 series, and she was a bit more of an assistant, but she was like the prototype for the later Avengers lead female characters that we would see with Emma Peel and so on. So interesting character from that as well, for sure.
Okay, and as I've said, the mother perhaps more aware of what's going on, possibly because she spends more time in the house with the children and realises that something is diverting the children's attention away from their schoolwork and their household chores. So she perhaps figures out something's going on sooner than her husband.
Yeah, and she seems to be sort of more affected by it too. The children, of course, are very important to this. Steve, played by Joshua Letouzel, is the oldest son, and he buys this old cavalry helmet at the auction at the beginning of the story. So it belonged to the Bettertons, the previous owners, and he was able to, you know, use most of his own pocket money to buy this helmet, which he cleans up, and of course strange things happen with that.
Yes, it's slightly weird when you rub this old helmet. Well, it's almost genie-like, I suppose, but not quite.
A little bit like that too, yeah. Ben, played by Robert Morgan, is the younger brother, and he's also interested in the history of things, and he is the first one to notice that there is a window on the outside of the house that does not match any of the rooms and windows on the inside. So there must be a hidden room that they didn't know about.
Yes, you can see this already. We've got mysterious objects. We've got a hidden room. It's all going to get quite sort of creepy in a way. The two boys have got an older sister, Jenny, played by Amanda Kirby. And she is given this small cameo-style musical box by Mrs. Betterton's granddaughter, Emily. And when opened, it plays a sort of music box version of a military march. And of course, this piece of music becomes significant because it seems to affect Mr. Clare's own piano playing. And the music is sort of important as we go through this story, Brian.
Yes, we will certainly talk more about the music box and the piano playing as we go.
And we should also note, while we're discussing the kids, that the casting director, I think, did a good job because they do look quite similar to each other, although they're obviously unrelated actors. But they certainly look like a family, and I think that works quite well for this show.
That's right. And of course, the difference in age means that there's no risk of confusing them, but you do have that resemblance, which is kind of nice.
We've got one other sort of major character, although he only turns up, I think, in the last three episodes, and that is the ghost hunter, Milton Guest. And he is played by the notable Peter Salas, who we've been talking about recently as the voice of Wallace in Wallace and Gromit. And here he is in 1978 as a cheerful and amiable ghost hunter and author, who the boys contact to help them investigate, and he comes into the house to try and sort of find out what the spirits want and see if he can help out. And a cheerful performance by Mr. Salas.
Yes, absolutely. And he is interesting in that the character is one that is really about driving the story forward and doing something with all of these spooky things that have been happening and sort of giving us a bit of exposition. But his performance adds something nice, so we have an interesting character out of it as well, which is nice.
Yes, it is splendid stuff and adds nicely to the cast.
So, as we've said, we do have lots of spooky things happening in this house. The music from the music box, whenever Jenny opens the music box and listens to this old military march on the music box, it is heard in different parts of the house. Timothy Clare, the father, hears this playing in his head, and when he's playing something else on piano, he is compelled to play this, and that becomes quite a significant thing, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but it's interesting how they do things with the music box melody and then other music working in with things.
Yes, as we've said, Mr. Clare is a musician. He has a rather fine piano in the house. He's quite frequently playing it. And as you say, we'll talk a bit more about the music and its involvement in the sort of spookiness as we go along.
Steve and Ben also see a ghostly face taking shape in this military helmet that Steve had bought. So they, you know, clean it up, and all of a sudden they're seeing the face that goes with the helmet.
Yes, and I think that happens right at the end of the first episode. So, you know, they get through the mechanics of, you know, buying the house and moving into the house and acquiring these items, and then they get onto some of the mystery quite quickly. So, you know, the boys are cleaning the helmet, and then something mysterious happens and they see this face. And could it be the cavalry officer in the very painting that Mr. Clare bought off Mrs. Betterton at the auction that starts this whole show off? Could it be the same officer? Could it be the helmet from that painting? Meanwhile, while the boys are seeing strange faces, Jenny, the daughter, is seeing a kindly old lady who appears to tuck her up in bed at night. So, you know, she's getting her own haunting going on at the same time.
And meanwhile, we have sort of some nice traditional haunting elements of plates crashing to the ground and things flying out of people's hands. And we see blood dripping from the ceiling during a dinner party that they consider very important for the business side of the music and making connections for the tour that that Timothy is hoping to have, and so on. And they have all sorts of strange sounds and blood and quite intense things happening at this this dinner.
Yeah, it's quite gruesome, actually. I mean, there's one more sort of creepy and gruesome twist to come later on in the story, but fairly early on, blood dripping from the ceiling onto a dinner guest for a children's show is one of the sort of creepier and nastier moments in this show, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's sort of a 1970s thing, I think, to have things as intense as that in a children's show.
Yes, it's not quite as intense as we saw a year or so later in Hammer House of Horror that we've talked about before, which you mentioned before we were recording, in the house that bled to death.
Yes, that took the blood to an entirely different level, but that was also a show later on in the evening that was not so much intended for children.
Yes, quite so. So we've also mentioned the other sort of mystery of the house, which is the hidden room, because when they're outside, Ben, the youngest boy, spots this window that shouldn't be there. And of course, that leads them to investigate the wall in their bedroom and to discover that there appears to be a sort of boarded up or plastered over door to a secret room that nobody knows about.
Yes, that's right. And the hidden room and what they find in the hidden room, of course, is very important to this.
And we'll get to that next time because it's the other big jolt from this show. But anyway, let's turn to our production notes about the Clifton House mystery. And we start with a producer, one of the two producers on this show, Patrick Dromgoole. We've mentioned him before because he produced the very successful Robin of Sherwood series. He produced another series that perhaps not quite so successful in our memories, She-Wolf of London. But he was also a director. He directed some episodes of the show Sky. And he also directed that rather impressive black and white version of Dracula from the Mystery and Imagination series in the 60s. So quite a lot of credits. And here he is as one of the producers on this show.
I believe he produced a lot of shows with a lot of shows for ITV around this era. He's a name who we see coming up quite a bit, Patrick Dromgoole.
Yes, he has an awful lot of credits at this time on ITV. And here he's teamed up with Leonard White, who was a producer from, again, that show, The Avengers. And the two of them set up this show for children's television.
That's right. And it was written by Daniel Farson and Harry Moore, who have a few credits on various Sherlock Holmes television productions and so on. It was directed by Hugh David, who had directed a couple episodes of Doomwatch. He also directed a Doctor Who serial from the 1960s called Fury from the Deep, which is missing, but is a serial from Doctor Who that has a very strong reputation as being a very good serial.
Yes, and a scary one as well. I think the only bits that survive are the bits that the Australian censor cut out, I think, because they were too scary.
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay, as we've said, it's a musical show. It's important. The piano music is quite important, and the theme music. And it was composed by Sidney Sagar, who I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that surname right. And he did the music, the rather sort of ethereal and creepy music that disturbed me for The Children of the Stones. Yes, there we are. I've mentioned it again. We can't go by many episodes without mentioning that cracking series.
That's true.
He also did the music for King of the Castle, which we've talked about. The actual piano music itself was played not by Sebastian Brakes, but by Kenneth Mobbs. So I presume that's his hands we see actually playing the keys, and they've managed to film it that it does look very convincingly like Sebastian Brakes is playing, I think, Brian.
Yes, we may see Brakes' hands playing some of the time, or it may always be Mobbs playing, I'm not sure. But certainly what we're hearing is Kenneth Mobbs playing. And it is significant that they had the piano playing done specifically for the show. They didn't just use some stock recordings of piano playing. The actual things that are used in this and what is played when and how is quite important. So it's actually rather important that it's done specifically for the show.
Yes, and as we say, a big important part of this show is the music and the weird effect it has, both with the music box on Jenny and, of course, on Mr. Clare's piano playing itself.
The Clifton House Mystery was produced by HTV for the ITV network. The HTV region covered Wales and the West Country, and they very firmly set the show in Bristol with references to local things and a lot of references to local history that are actually quite fundamental to the story, which is kind of nice to have that regional tie to it.
Yes, it's a very Bristol show. We'll get to that a bit more in our next episode. But having said that, there's no outside broadcast work or outside recording work on this at all. It's all in studio sets, I believe, Brian. It's all filmed in TV studios. But the sets of the actual house itself don't look too bad at all. It certainly looks very run down and creepy and gothic in a way for a 1970s family home.
Yes, and the vast majority of this is set in the house. There are a few scenes set outside the house and a few scenes somewhere else where they go to hear Milton Guest speak to get him involved. But most of this really takes place inside that house.
Yes. Okay. It does have a quite nice opening title sequence. It's very simple in a way. It's a simple but rather nicely hand-drawn illustration of the Clifton area of Bristol. You can see the distinctive Clifton suspension bridge in the background, and then the camera sort of focuses in or sort of zooms in onto the Clifton house of the title. And as we say, it's very much about that house, and so we do get it all set there. But it's not bad, and of course we've got the nice piano music to go with it by Sidney Sagar, so it's an interesting opening sequence.
Yes, it's a nice way to help put the house into the context of that location, which is so important to it.
Yes.
The Clifton House Mystery was broadcast on ITV weekly starting October 8th of 1978.
Okay. So that's all we've got in terms of production notes. There's not a lot of information out there about this show, but anyway, that's what we've been able to find. We should now talk about the availability for you and how you could watch this show if you choose to join us on viewing it. And so here in Region 2, as ever, we have, guess what, a network DVD release. Not much in the way of extras, just some production stills. Unfortunately, they haven't had interviews with any of the surviving cast members or anything like that, which is a shame. But it's a nice, sharp transfer, I think, of the six episodes, Brian. So it looks good. And it's very reasonably priced at the moment, just £6.44 on Amazon here in the UK, but doesn't seem to be on any of the rental sites at all. And I don't know if it had any overseas distribution or releases, Brian. So I suspect for Region 1...
For Region 1, there is no release. Yeah, I'm not aware of any international broadcasts on this. There may have been some, but I'm not aware of anything. And we do see some imported copies on Amazon here in North America, but they're very expensive. So really for this, you want to import from amazon.co.uk or some other source, but you want to import it from the UK if you want to get a hold of this one.
Okay, but at least it is quite cheap over here in the UK. It's just the import cost, I suppose, Brian.
Yes.
Okay, so that will do it for our first episode. We're going to come back next time, obviously, and talk a bit more about the actual mystery at the heart of this Clifton House. And we'll talk about a few hints that there may be even more to the story than the series itself reveals. We'll reflect briefly on this terrific decade of children's television in the 70s. And, of course, we'll tell you whether or not you should get this one for your own shelves and watch this if you've never seen it before.
Yes, indeed. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or you can search for British Invaders on Facebook, and you will find our Facebook group where we have some fun discussion and interesting things about the shows we're covering and shows that we might cover in the future. And we always like to talk about Doctor Who and about the Big Finish audios. So lots of fun stuff there.
Absolutely. Or you could drop by the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com, and you'll find some similarly minded geek related shows streaming over the internet. We go out on Mondays and Tuesdays. There's plenty of other shows there. Tell them that we sent you.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also saying goodbye.